This is the Shrimps Verdict podcast. All opinions expressed are those of the individual contributors and not necessarily those of either Morecambe Football Club or of Beyond Radio.
Every kick, every game, every goal. Full match commentary of Morecambe FC on Beyond Radio. This is Shrimps Live from Beyond Radio.
Yards out towards the right side it goes. Lewis Payne tries to get the ball in, does get the ball in, it's going to be smashed in for 1-0, and that is a terrible piece of defending by Morecambe. You have to say we are the makers of our own downfall there. And it had to be him, didn't it? It had to be him, former Morecambe hero Aaron Wildig. And he did that so often when he was a Morecambe player, drifting in from the back, right place, right time. We just didn't pick him up. Didn't think it was a brilliant ball in, really, from the right-hand side by Lewis Payne. We probably should have cleared it. Fell to Wildig, and he sweeps it past Archie Mair. And in the 12th minute, it's Newport County 1, Morecambe 0. Payne has it back. He's got room to perhaps get across or maybe drive towards the byline here under attention from Jan Songo. Plays it down the line instead, looking for Bryn Morris, who gets across in towards the back post, where it's volleyed beautifully into the bottom corner of Archie Mair's net, and Newport County have doubled their advantage. It's a disastrous start for the Shrimps. It was Adam Lewis this time up from the back. He met it really sweetly on the volley, you have to say, with his left foot. And Carl Jameson sweeps it out towards the edge of the box. Good header by Badeau against Will Evans, and then to Tonda on the edge of his own. In fact, it was Kumbeni 20 yards out. Here's Jordan Slew trying to get us on the counter-attack. Guion Edwards has got room to stretch his legs now down the right-hand side. Guion Edwards is cutting in. Guion Edwards finds the back of the net. That is a fine solo goal. And what did we say just a couple of minutes ago? It would be very handy indeed for Guion Edwards to open his Morecambe account. And that was a fine way to do it. He hit the crossbar just a few minutes ago. But no stopping Guion Edwards that time. Picked the ball up. Newport County supporters around us want the ball pulled back for a free kick because of the Newport County player down on the edge of the Morecambe penalty area. Play was allowed to continue. Slew got us going on the front foot, played it to Guion Edwards just inside the Newport half, and he was simply too quick for the Newport County back line. Drew the keeper, slots it under him on the halfway line. Couldn't make possession stick, and Lewis is over here. Man over on the left hand side, Adam Lewis for Newport, left hand corner, plays the ball in, it's into the back of the net for 3-1, and we've been caught by an absolute sucker punch. And guess who scored? It had to be him. It absolutely had to be him. How many times in a Morecambe shirt did he drift in from the centre of midfield into the penalty area unannounced and score? Let's see what this delivery is like by Guion Edwards. Very crowded penalty area. Corner comes in. In swinger towards the edge of the 6-yard box. Adams tries to keep it alive. Well, what about that on Jed Garner by the goalkeeper? It's going to run loose and into the back of the net for 3-2. And it's Chris Stokes with it. And it's another sensational Jed Brannan come back on. Chris Stokes pokes it towards goal. It goes in almost apologetically off the far post. And with 20 minutes to play here at Rodney Parade, it's Newport County 3, Morecambe 2. Is another sensational comeback on the cards here. Ball into the feet of Joe Adams on the halfway line. Nice feet. Guion Edwards is hairing up alongside him. Adams is still going. He threads a beautiful ball through. Here is Jordi Hawula inside the box. Jordi Hawula is going to be nodded in for the equaliser by Guion Edwards. And with 17 minutes to go, we are all square here at Rodney Parade. The comeback kings have done it again. Beautiful ball through by Joe Adams, you have to say. Picked it perfectly, threaded the needle through, and there was Jordi Hawula. Angle was tight, keeper made an initial first save, it just lollipopped up in the air, and there was Guion Edwards following in, nodded it in from almost on the goal line to double his tally for the evening and square things up on 74 minutes. How about this? Newport County 3, Morecambe 3. Well, here come Newport County on a rare attack forward by themselves. They're in the penalty area. Shot comes in. Oh, it's in for 4-3. And again, we've been caught in the counter. Good finish. And that time it was down the right-hand side. We didn't pick Harry Charlesley up. You've got to say it was a great finish. Left-footed curler past the outstretched arm of Archie Mayer into the back of the net. And the next twist in the tail here at Rodney Parade has come the way of the host. So with 12 minutes to play, fine finish that by Harry Charlesley. But we've been undone again from a wide position. Ball in, great finish. Newport County 4, Morecambe 3. Archie Mayer, the goalkeeper, saying to Jed Brannan, jumped again in the box. Needs to get on with it. Songo chips it towards the edge of the area. Badeau doesn't win the aerial battle and it's smashed clear by Lewis Payne up towards the halfway line. And Newport could have a breakaway of their own on here. Seb Palmer Holden up against his man. Palmer Holden, it's three against three. Palmer Holden puts the game to bed. We had to commit men forward and we've just got caught on the break with the sucker punch. And deep in stoppage time, it's the Bristol Rovers loanee, Seb Palmer Holden, off the bench, kept his cool, slips it under Archie Mayer. Newport County 5, Morecambe 3. And here in South Wales this Tuesday night, there's not going to be a famous Shrimps away day comeback.
Reaction to the action. This is the Shrimps Verdict on Beyond Radio.
There is barely time to kick off as the referee, Scott Simpson, puts the whistle to his lips. And it wasn't to be then for Morecambe tonight, despite a heroic second half comeback. We got it back to 3-3 after a brace from Aaron Wildegan made it Newport 3. Morecambe 1. And it was the Gwion Edwards show, really. He scored his first goal in the Morecambe shirt to reduce the arrears to 2-1 in the first half. That was after 12 minutes by Wildig, sweeping it in from the right wing cross, and then Lewis with a great blistering left footed volley 5 minutes later and put Graham Coughlin's men 2 goals to the good. Gwion Edwards hit the bar soon after before a fine solo goal for his first in a Morecambe shirt a few moments later reduced the arrears to 2-1. It was 3-1 on 53 minutes. Aaron Wildig again just finding the back of the net from close range after a left wing Lewis cross, and we thought that might be that. But we know Morecambe on the road, we know they are never say die, we know that we never know when we're beaten, and that very much proved to be the case. It was 3-2 on 70 minutes. Chris Stokes poking home through a crowd of players to make it 3-2. And 2 minutes later, Gwion Edwards nodded it in from almost on the goal line after Jordi Hiwula had done good work off the bench. Saved by Nick Townsend after being put through brilliantly by Joe Adams. Save just came up in the air and Gwion Edwards nodded it into the empty net for the equaliser. Edwards should have really scored his hat-trick and made it 4-3. Morecambe a couple of minutes later. He blazed wide from a rebound. Again, a Jordi Hiwula shot. Well saved. And then a couple of minutes after that, 78 on the watch when Harry Charlesley made it 4-3 to Newport. And again, we were just done from a wide position. This time again on the right-hand side. Charlesley found space inside the Morecambe penalty area and a fine left-footed curler past the outstretched arm of Archie Mayer away to his right-hand side and into the back of the net. After that, Morecambe still didn't give up. There were still a couple of opportunities. A good save low down to his right-hand side by Townsend. Denied Hiwula, who could have had a couple of goals off the bench on any other night. Archie Mayer was called into action a couple of times as well, late on in the game. And deep in stoppage time. In the 7th minute of time added on, we had a free kick on the halfway line. Couldn't make it stick on the edge of the Newport County penalty area. And having committed everybody forward, including the goalkeeper, Newport County broke. And it was a substitute. Seb Palmer Holden off the bench. He kept his cool to wrap up the points in what has been a pulsating encounter here this Tuesday night here in South Wales at Rodney Parade. It's back-to-back defeats for Morecambe, having slipped to defeat on Saturday against Wrexham. We don't like Wales very much, do we, unfortunately? Luckily, we're not going to play anybody from Wales between now and the end of the season. Another long away trip ticked off. That is the last one, though, for Morecambe now until the final day when we play Swindon. We've got a much kinder run of fixtures in terms of travel, with 5 home games and 3 close away fixtures. coming down the track. We've slipped a little bit further away from playoff contention. But if we can show the heart, the spirit, the determination like we did in the second half to get back on level terms at 3-3, we are definitely going to be in this promotion playoff picture mix right until the end of the season. We've got to stop conceding goals from crosses out wide, though. That is absolutely killing us at the moment. We conceded 3 goals from wide areas, and they all really should have been defending much better than what they were. If we can get that under control and play with that intensity that we did in the second half, I fancy us to be right in the mix right the way through until the end of the season.
Jed, how on earth do we sum that up? You've lost 5-3 in the end. You could easily have won the game. You were behind again twice. How's everybody feeling in that changing room?
Devastated, to be honest with you. I thought at times we were breathtaking going forward today. Missed a lot of chances. But we can't defend crosses like that. We just can't. We just spoke about it in the changing room. The lads all know. We're not blaming anyone individually. As a team, we just can't defend crosses. We can't leave men free in the box. It kills us. We can't come from away from home like that and create 8 or 9 chances and get beat 5-3. We just can't. Disappointing.
You've had so many of these comebacks in recent weeks. Does that in some ways disguise the goals you've been conceding?
No, not really, no. I just thought the goals we conceded today, like, we started the game off really, really well today. I'd say for 10 minutes, we never got an hour off. And we got 2 really, really good chances. And then they had one break. We talked about stopping crosses and we let us cross. No one picked the lad up. We got a tap in. Just can't happen. Things like that. If we want to go on to get in the playoffs, we've got to shore up at the back. We've got to. We can't do that.
How do you transmit to them, or do they do it themselves, that response that you get? Because at 2-0 down, it was like a switch flicked.
Well, we spoke about it at half time, the chances we created. The lads are not soft. They see at times they're going through. Guillaume's unplayable tonight, by the way. He goes through. He's going through them like a knife through butter. He couldn't get near him, so we knew we were going to get chances. And then obviously he scored. He hit the crossbar. We were right in the game then, and then we got it back to 3-3. And then we switched off for it straight away for their goal, another cross, which hurts us a lot.
At 3-3, do you feel like this is going to be your night?
Well, we had the better chances. Even after spoke to their manager, he said it could have went either way, and we had the better chances, to be honest. And we did. We really did. But you can't conceal goals like that. As I say, you can't score 3 goals away from home and get beat 5-3. It just can't happen.
The goal threat that you possess is very obvious, but you've already touched on Guion Edwards. Just how influential was he tonight?
He was very good. That's the best he's played for Morecambe. He was unplayable. He was just going right through them. But not just him. I thought we were really a really big threat going forward. I thought it was all over. Joe Adams was very good second half as well. Charlie, Jordy, when he come on, Jed Garner, they were all very, very good today going forward. But again, we missed chance after chance as well. We just spoke about that as well. And changing about creating the chance, and we have to put the ball in the net.
Do you have to pick them up a bit going into a game at the weekend? Are the spirits that are going to need to be lifted in there because of the way that's come about?
Yeah, they're very disappointed because the winners in there, they're all winners. The team, the units were a really tight unit and we're all devastated with each other. But it's not, we lose together. I said last week, we lose together, we win together and we lose together. And we'll go against Sunday. It's still not over. We'll fight at the very end. We said before the game tonight, we need 6 wins out of 10. So now we need 6 out of 9.
And that spirit that we've seen, that character that we've seen, does that potentially give you the edge to go again at the weekend and get the 3 points that you've not got tonight?
Yeah, I can't wait for Sunday's game. I really can't. I'm looking for, especially the way we were attacking tonight. If anyone was watching us tonight, they'd be terrified to play against us. But then they'll look at the frails at the back where we can't defend crosses, which we will work on all week, and we'll get it right.
How hard is it to work on things on the training ground when you're in South Wales on a Tuesday night and all the travel that entails and the fixture schedule at the minute? Is it just practically difficult to actually work on things?
It is, yeah. Yesterday, travelled on the Monday. We trained on the pitch light because we had a lot of stiffness in the camp, and we couldn't do much yesterday. We haven't done today. We've just been for a walk and had a couple of meetings talking about how we're going to play. So it's really not the same. You need to be on the training pitch to do stuff, and we'll be back on.
We talked about picking him up just in terms of physically. How is everybody? There was no senior in the 18 today, for example.
He was a massive, massive loss for us tonight. Obviously, we all know how good Joel is, and the threat that he has going forward is fantastic. And he's been great for us, so he's a big loss. But hopefully he'll be back Sunday, so there's a bonus for us. And it was good to see young Adam Fairclough in today, a 16-year-old kid we had in the squad, so fantastic for him as well.
Incredible experience for Fairclough, who is only at the very start of a potential professional career. How important is it to give him some exposure, the promising youngsters, to the first team?
That's what we are. We're that type of club. We've got to bring youngsters through, and like Adam Mayer and Sheldon, to make money to keep us stay afloat. But today, I really wanted to get him on the pitch, but it was one of those games that it was so tight it could go either way. I really couldn't have got him on. So he'll get his chance this before the end of the season, top player, and he'll be always around the first team.
With Joel Jed, is it just a bit of tightness and a bit of stiffness?
He's feeling his groin. He hasn't pulled nothing, but he's really stiff. He's really stiff. He's had a lot of games this year, Joel, so it's been tough for him, but he'll be back Sunday, hopefully.
It looked like Gwion was holding his hamstring as he came off. Was that just the rigours of the game, or is he OK?
Well, the amount that he run tonight, it was just cramp. He got cramp, so I thought I'd best get him off just in case, get him ready for Sunday, because he was so good tonight. He really was.
And another player not in the squad was Jacob Davenport. What is the news on him?
Yeah, he's got a groin injury. He's out for 3-4 weeks.
So that's almost the end of the season, possibly.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? We're a small squad. When you lose good players like Jacob, it's really tough. But on the positive, we've got the three players will be back in 3 weeks, so they'll be there to give us the final push.
It's those swings and roundabouts that we're going to need ahead of that final push. It seems nobody wants to break into that top seven. Jed, we're still only 3 points away with 9 games to go.
Tell me about it. That's the hard thing when you look at it and see the results tonight. We would have been right up there, but we're still in it. We're still 3 points behind with the game in hand, so we'll keep going.
Thanks, Gavin.
Thank you.
Gwion, I imagine that's a really hard one to take. It looked for a long time like it was going to be another one of those comebacks, and you're leaving with nothing to show for it. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I think very frustrating. Everyone's gutted in there. Same old story, really. I think we did actually start the game quite well, I thought. We had a few corners with a few chances, but then we need to be more ruthless defending. We need that desire just to clear the ball and actually take our chances up the other end. But then again, we get back in the game and then we let it slip again. But I think, what was it, nine games left, wherever it is now. I think if you want to keep on going now, we need to really tidy up on them little mistakes. Because a lot of good things out there today, a lot of positives, but then there's a lot of negatives to go with that as well. And I think we really need to quickly sort that out.
Does it almost make it harder when you're showing such attacking prowess and scoring 3 goals away from home that you are making those errors and giving away goals?
Yeah, I think if you score 3 goals away from home, you normally win the game, don't you? But now, obviously Newport, they done well. They played well, but I think we just need to be more ruthless defending and more ruthless in the box. But then you say that we scored 3 goals away from home, so it's a strange one, but there's a lot of chances that we did have. I think we could be 4-5-0 up if we defend correctly, but we've got to work on that if we want to progress now.
There's a real mix of players and experience levels in this squad. How steep a learning curve is it for a group that's been relatively recently brought together?
Yeah, there's a lot of experience in there and there's a lot of young lads as well, but I think at times we need to show a bit more experience on the pitch. I think first half, we're obviously behind and we're rushing, we're giving the ball straight back to them, and we need to slow the game down a little bit sometimes, and we need to recognise that quicker. That will help us a lot, and like we said, we're good at coming back, fighting, staying in the game. We come back tonight, but we just need to tidy up on defending crosses and clearing the ball, and then obviously taking our chances down the other end.
I'm sure right now it feels less significant because you lost, but it's a milestone night for you as well. Your first goals for the club, your first Football League goals in quite a long time. How big is that for you to get your first in Morecambe colours follow it up?
It was nice. It was a weird one. I think that was my 50th goal, the first one, I think. So it was weird not being able to celebrate it. But it's nice to score 2 goals. Shame didn't get the third, come at me too quick, and then obviously the one off the bar. But again, it's nice to get the goal, first goal for the club, and get another one. But again, it's disappointing, the result tonight, when we do well to get back in the game, and really we should go on to get something out of it.
Do you feel like personally you are now firing on all cylinders? I know Jed Brannan managed your game time, brought you on as a sub a lot, and then you started starting games.
Yeah, no, I think we had a chat when I come in. Obviously, I'd been out for a long time. So I come in fit, felt brilliant, but obviously playing 90 minutes every week is Saturday, Tuesday, it's difficult for anyone. So it's nice to be getting back out of there. I felt fresh all the way since I've been here, but it's good to be getting back-to-back 90s now and getting there. I feel good and hopefully I can carry that on.
Long trip back to the Northwest now. Go again on Sunday at Salford. Will it really focus the mind, not taking anything from Newport, to go into that and redouble your efforts?
Yeah, we just got to keep on going now. Games are coming thick and fast, and we just got to put this behind us now. The game's gone, and we concentrate this week on getting things right for Salford, and we've got to go there and get the win now.
You're still well and truly in the playoff equation. Nobody appears to be jumping into that top seven and seizing that final place. Do you take encouragement from that?
Yeah, it's tight, I think. I think we need to start to realise quickly that if we win these games, we've got a really good chance at it. But we need to work on that this week now, and hopefully we'll start putting things right and we can see the results and get us back in there.
And I think what we've seen recently is you don't lack belief. You've certainly got that belief, haven't you, to get in there?
Yeah, we've got the belief. Like, you can see tonight where we've come back in the game, and we just need to tidy up on those things and be a bit ruthless to stay in the game. If we take a point, it's a good point away from home after being behind. So we just need to recognise and learn from the mistakes, and hopefully we can do that sooner than later.
It's the Shrimps Verdict podcast, part of Shrimps Live on Beyond Radio. This is Dave Salmon. Thanks for your eyes and ears on Shrimps Live last night. Right old topsy-turvy game, wasn't it, at Rodney Parade? And it's a little bit far away as well from North Lancashire. We got into bed just after 3:30 a.m. Goodness gracious me. But the good news is that is, apart from Swindon Town on the last day of the season, that was Morecambe's last long away trip, last overnight stay for the squad and the staff as well, until Swindon on the final day. Our next eight fixtures of the nine that we have to play are five home games and then three away fixtures against Stockport County, against Accrington Stanley over the Easter Bank holiday, and this coming Sunday away at Salford. So in terms of travel, not too bad at all. And do you know what? I think that is going to play into our hands significantly. Hopefully give us a little edge over our playoff chasing rivals. Jed's going to absolutely be working on the defence over the next few days. You just know that. I think the boys have got a couple of days off now. They're going to be back in training hard on Friday and Saturday because it is a busy schedule. Easter coming up as well. But you know that the boys are going to be trying to put that that defensive issue about stopping the crosses from wide positions ahead of our game at Salford on Sunday. Let's look ahead to that game now then with Danny. Danny is the man behind the brilliant One Up Front, the Salford City podcast, and it's a proper detailed tactical analysis kind of podcast with Danny. It goes into forensic detail really about all things to do with Salford, and a big fan of the club, an ideal man then to get the full lowdown on Carl Robinson's men ahead of our trip there. This coming Sunday afternoon is a 2 p.m. kickoff at Moor Lane, the Peninsula Stadium. If you are going to the game and you're driving there, get there early because there's no car park anywhere close by because it's in a residential area just by Presswich, just off the M60. So you'll need to find somewhere on the street to park. If you are going by public transport, you'll need to perhaps get a taxi. You can get a tram quite close, I think, from out of Manchester City Centre. You might then need to jump in a cab or perhaps go for a little walk. But if you're not heading down to the game, of course, full match commentary as ever on Beyond Radio, on Shrimps Live. Listen for free on FM and DAB. And you can also listen and watch via the club's website, morecambefc.com, and click on the iFollow link. We'll be on air from just before 1:55 Sunday afternoon. So, Danny, thanks for jumping back on our pod, mate. Really appreciate it. Before we get going about all things on the pitch, give us the full lowdown. Firstly, why did you start it, and what's it all about with the One Up Front podcast?
Why did I start it? I used to write these long essay-length blogs on a message board about Salford's performances, all about tactics, this, that, and the other. And I just thought that not everybody wants to spend 15 minutes reading all my analysis. So I thought, is there a better way to make it more accessible? And I thought, well, I listen to podcasts all the time of various other, you know, football and sports things. So I thought I'd turn the same the same notes into an audio form, and that's what I've done. It's growing all the time, you know. I've been in the Telegraph, contributing to articles and stuff. So it's been really good. And I think I've done 60 episodes this season. I did about 18 last season, so I'm coming up on the 100 quite soon.
There's been an explosion, hasn't there, of fans-led content, online content, and I suppose it doesn't matter who you support. That's good for everybody.
Yeah, I love it because to me, the most satisfying thing has been when someone either has messaged me or come up to me at a match and said, some of the things you've mentioned on an episode or over a period, I'm now starting to appreciate football in a different way. I'm starting to look at the tactical element, the strategies and people dropping deeper and why that's happening. So I'm not putting out a narrative that is a factual one because nobody can unless it's the manager. I'm just putting out a theory as to what I see and a talking stroke thinking point. And it seems to go down quite well. We've got a relatively small fan base, so it's never going to go worldwide. But for the size of our fan base, I think it's doing pretty well.
And it filled that gap in the market. I don't think when I was looking about for a Salford City pod, I think there's been a few in previous seasons, but
yeah,
perhaps surprisingly, there wasn't really anything else about there. So you filled that gap quite nicely.
Well, it's funny on that point because I was actually involved in a previous podcast, of which the other, the founders of that podcast, the Dirty Old Podcast, as it was called, and now doing other projects. So I kind of started my own whilst I was contributing to that, and now I'm kind of the last man standing.
Let's look at matters on the field then, Danny, and with slight trepidation, I suppose, from your point of view, is it fair to say that the season hasn't quite panned out the way you wanted it to?
Well, we can chop it right down, not in the middle, but we can chop it into two parts. We can look at the Neil Wood disappointment, which was profoundly disappointing, and you can kind of sideline that because that's not going to really impact us when we play yourselves. I think if you look at the team you're going to face, although it's essentially the same squad, there is a massive difference in terms of how physical we are, the self-belief, and the result. The positive results we got in probably his first six games were incredible. We are now on a severe downturn, although we have, to kind of make a slight excuse, face some decent teams in the last few weeks.
Looking at Neil Wood and watching the Class of 92 documentary, he seemed to be a decent enough head coach, had some good ideas. But it also seemed to me, Danny, as if perhaps the players at his disposal maybe didn't quite buy into what he was trying to do. There's one scene in one of the episodes of the Class of 92 that sticks in my mind where he's got his big fancy screen and he's got his magic pen on the board and he's given it all the analysis and he should have stood here and blah, blah, blah. And then the camera pans round and three or four of the squad who are meant to be paying attention, they're just scrolling on their mobiles. So that suggested to me that perhaps they weren't buying into his philosophy perhaps as much as they should have done.
Okay, I don't always have two answers for the same thing, but I'll look at that in two ways. One, I agree that because of his lack of, I've heard since he's left that things have leaked out from the club that he didn't communicate with the players very often and therefore didn't win the respect a lot. So I think there was an issue there in terms of the bond between the playing squad and himself. But secondly, I don't think he was provided with a team that could play his style. You can't ask Matt Smith to function correctly in a possession-based style. And that's all that Neil Wood ever wanted to do. The team we played yesterday in MK Dons are what Neil Wood was trying to achieve, but he didn't have the players. So there are more elements than just the players being tuned out to him, I think, that caused the issues.
He had a fair, relatively speaking, from what had gone previously, had a fair old crack of the whip in terms of the time he was in charge. Was it the right time to make the change, in your opinion, when he actually did go?
No, it was too late. And I was a big fan of him because I liked, I'd never seen as much tactical innovation because Gary Bowyer, who was when I joined, he was the manager at the time. He seemed to have a very functional old style approach. Whereas Neil Wood did try a lot of things that I saw in kind of the Champions League and the Premier League, and I thought they're very interesting. But in terms of the timing of when he actually went, I thought it was possibly anywhere like a month or more too late, because the players, even ever since we lost against Wrexham, and I don't even know when that date was, ever since they came back and beat us 3-2 when we were leading with about 5 minutes to go 2-1 away, that we actually never were able to hold a lead again. And any time a team actually scored against us, we would struggle and we would fall to bits. So I think the actual belief in the team went so low that we should have actually got rid earlier.
Paul Robinson's got a good CV, not quite panned out the way you perhaps wanted it to. What is the reason for the current downturn in form?
For me, it's just because it's overly predictable. I did two episodes of my own podcast with one with an MK Dons fan, one with an Oxford fan, to say, what can we expect from Mr. Robinson? Because I've heard of him, but I didn't know what he stood for. And they said, get ready for plan B being try to do plan A better. And I was like, oh, right, okay, I wonder what that is, you know? And ultimately, that's exactly what we've got, that the surprise bounce that we got through playing almost Sam Allardyce functional, and he did have a time with Sam Allardyce at Leeds, very short time, I think, that he came in playing direct, very physical, and it's never altered one iota really from the start to now. And I just thought, for those first five or six games, when are a team going to figure out that everything's going through Matt Smith, everything's about winning the flick on, and there is very little variety beyond just pumping the ball forward? And that's why I think, you know, professional video analysts, managers and coaches have gone, we know how to counter that now. And that's what MK Dons have done, Gillingham have done, and other teams recently.
That's interesting, because if that is your tactic, lump it up to the big man, then I think that might play into our hands, certainly the way that we play with our back four and two central midfielders and two out and out wingers. I think we'll be very happy to mop that up. Certainly we've got the power to win the aerial duels. But Matt Smith's a good enough player though, isn't he, Danny? Really, he's got a good reputation. He's scored a lot of goals in recent times as well. So it might not be the complete disaster that perhaps you think.
Oh, no. I mean, I'll say this, that, and I've actually said it in my podcast this morning, that the way we got success initially under Carl was that teams were doubling and tripling up on Matt Smith because they thought, okay, well, he's going to use him heavily. We're going to play a lot of balls to him. And what we were actually, that was a decoy in the sense that we were actually more interested in winning the second ball. So even if Matt Smith lost a header, we had so many players in the opposition half waiting for that second ball that we were able to get a lot of scoring opportunities. Now, and I'm sure your guys will be exactly the same, they are barely competing with Matt Smith for the flick on, because if he's outside the area, it's not going in, you know? So instead, they are kind of sitting deeper, not having three players on Matt Smith and just trying to pick up all the runners off him, because that's where the threat is. And it's been night and day. Once teams figured that out, then we have had very, very little success in the opposition half.
So different manager to the last time we played earlier in the season. Danny, can you give us the SP, the inside track on your team, formation, style of play, personnel? What do we need to know?
I can try. I can give it a go, because I think I'm starting to see that, because just going back, actually, I'll go back to the podcast I had with the MK Dons fan and Oxford fan. They said that if you cut Carl Robinson down the middle, you will see a 4-3-3 formation. That is what his DNA is. And more or less, you can kind of see that with what we're trying to do. At times it's 4-2-3-1, at times it's 4-2-4, but in essence, it's a 4-3-3 split. One player who has surprised the heck out of me since Cal's come in has been Junior Luamba, who was a very lowly rated player that we got as a bit of a cast off from Oldham Athletic, who were in the National League. So he never got a look in under Neil Wood. And now he's being talked of by Cal as a million pound player, I should say, which I think the fan base, our own fan base, are looking at with right. A bit dubious, because he's not proved that yet. He's only had a handful of games, but he is a threat because he's fast. Apparently he's the fastest player Cal's ever managed, 10.4 seconds over 100 metres, which sounds pretty good to me. Not great on the ball, and still a bit wet behind the ears in terms of his football intelligence, but he's a threat. You've mentioned Matt Smith. Elliot Watt, compared to the last time we talked, is fully back from injury and he's in much better form than he's been. And he's really looking in control of when we're allowed to play, other than lumping it up. He's actually able to build the tact in a slightly different way. So they're our main threats.
You lost Luke Bolton in the January transfer window. He was very, very impressive for you. Have you adequately replaced him? I mean, he's not getting a kick, really, at Wrexham. He was on the bench against us yesterday, didn't come on the pitch. I imagine he's been a big miss for you.
You might imagine that. And again, I'm probably far too negative about my own players, but I'll just give you the inside line as to why he went. It's not just because Wrexham threw a lot of money at it, although that helped. It's that he wouldn't sign a contract to come back next season. So it was either losing for free at the end of the season or take some money, whatever it was, from Wrexham. Whether he will perform a brilliant role for Wrexham or not, I'm not quite sure, because he's another one who's incredibly fast, but when he's got the ball at his feet, everything seems to fall apart a little bit. So you could see a great highlight reel of Luke, for instance, but then when you actually see him in person game after game, you might see real inconsistencies. We've actually replaced him, if you can call it that, with converting Junior Luamba from a central striker to a right wide forward. So he's slotted into that position. And I personally think that the way that Cal's talking up players like Junior Luamba, he's actually doing it to try and make them marketable commodities, because our club, as you may or may not know, it's been relatively well advertised at the moment. We're looking for new investment beyond the class of 92. So if we can help that by selling players other teams want, like Luke Bolton, like Junior Luamba for £1 million, which is probably dream world, then that's all probably going to help us reinvest and create the kind of team that Cal wants us to next year.
So is Matt Smith your only goal threat? I know he's got 23 goals, which is a very impressive statistic already this season. Is he your only source of goals, though?
No. I would say that Callum Hendry is also, because Callum is... The problem is that neither Callum or Matt are fast. So our strike force lacks pace, whichever way you slice it. But Callum is a very good finisher, very good technique on the ball, very good link-up player. But the problem is when you play those two players together, is that our team looks confused between, do we go long or do we play it short into the link-up support striker? So they actually, as much as they seem to get on a personal level, I don't feel they've ever worked as a partnership very well, which is exactly the same problem that Neil Wood had before he was dispensed with.
Interesting you say that, because you would think that with somebody with that amount of goals that it would all be hunky-dory. I suppose it's similar to when we had Cole Stockton a couple of seasons ago. He was our out-and-out goal scorer and we didn't really have too much elsewhere, but it sounds along very similar lines.
Yeah, I actually think that another thing, I keep going to these podcasts that I had with the MK and the Oxford fans, they also said Cal Robinson has no use for a target man. The thing is, he doesn't have a choice at the minute. He's got no one else to use. So I think if despite the goal tally of Smith this season, I think his contract ends at the end of this year, and I don't think he will be here next year. Someone else will probably take a punt on him and think, well, let's put those 20 odd goals in our team. The thing is, though, you have to play such a distinct style to get the best out of Matt Smith that you lose so much other attacking opportunity. You can't play through balls, you can't play channel balls in behind. So it's not like we would have scored zero goals without Matt Smith. He's just taken up the slack because we've created a lot of opportunities for him. But my belief is, and this is again something that may not be massively publicised, because Cal has not committed to anything beyond this season, as in Cal Robinson, then we don't know who's going to be leading the charge next year, because Alex Bruce has been brought in as assistant manager. Is it going to be a transition in the next, in the off-season to Alex Bruce? Don't know. But if Cal is there, I do not think he'll want Matt Smith next year. I think he'll want to re-engineer something completely differently.
Is there any danger that you might get sucked into a relegation battle this season? 10 points, I think, is the gap at time of recording. I know we're both going to be playing our respective games on Tuesday. It's quite a gap, but it only takes a couple of games and suddenly it's half that. And are you in any danger this season?
I think we still technically are, and we definitely were when Cal joined us, because when his first game in charge, although he actually got sent off after about 15 minutes, which is probably a typical Cal Robinson, you know, I'll show the fans and the players how much I care by getting sent off, but maybe that's just me reading too much into it. At that time, that we were very, very close point-wise to Forest Green, who I think we came back late and got a draw against them, and ever since have been able to get a bit of separation. So we're not technically safe. We are, unfortunately, consistently losing now, which is a real worry. But the great thing for me is, despite that self-belief, that confidence, we attacked, for me, in my opinion, for 90 minutes against MK Dons away. And we as soon as we conceded goals under Neil Wood, we would stop attacking. We would basically, you know, poo ourselves. There's a nicer way to say it. And now we don't do that. Carl has put like a rod of iron through that team. So I always think we're in with a chance right from minute one to minute 95.
Now, we are the comeback kings on the road. Danny, we've won 3-2 four times. We've won 2-1 three times away. Mm-hmm. All those occasions we fell behind in the game to come back. So doesn't matter what the score is on Sunday, we're always going to think we're in with the game. So that must be a concern.
Yeah. I mean, we got a decent early goal the other day, yesterday, in fact, against MK Dons. So I think our problem is probably defensively, because I've said it many times in my own podcast that as much as Cal tends to play a 4-3-3, when we have the ball, we slip into a 2-4-4 formation because the fullbacks slip into midfield. And that we got absolutely punished for that against Mansfield. It was a mistake to play it against such a good team. And I think at least one of the goals yesterday was exactly the same reason, that we leave ourselves too open in the wide areas on a counter-attack. So it's fine being an attacking-minded coach, which is what Cal Robinson has always been, I believe. But the fact that you can come back late, and the fact that we play probably an overly attacking formation, especially in possession, could be worrying for us.
Is it fair to say, Danny, that you are going through a little bit of change and things are evolving behind the scenes?
Yeah.
Is there as much money being pumped into the club as what there was maybe two or three seasons ago? Or are you now moving more towards that you've got to be a bit more sustainable in terms of your business model?
Yeah, I think you've hit it on the... I know you've asked a question, but I think your feeling is definitely what I would say is that look at our transfer business at the deadline. We brought a young lad in who's, I don't think, ever played for Burnley from the under-21s on a long-term contract, Jez Davis, never played for us yet. He's been in the B team. We also brought in a loanee from West Ham, Dan Chesters, who we've been playing out of position. So neither of those are high wage or cost us anything. And I don't think that's an accident. And the thing that surprises me is that Carl, who seems such a strong personality, that he's joined the club and he's basically stood for the fact that we're investing so little into his team. So I do feel that the investment has been minimal this year, really, really low. I can't see how it could change next season because there's no guarantee that we will get promoted or get in the playoffs or have any chance of promotion next year, even if Cal does stay. So I can understand they want a spreadsheet, so I'm going to look at it and say, this club is hemorrhaging money. Why do I keep wanting to put money into it? And I've echoed that in a few articles recently. So yeah, I do feel the taps are being quite quickly turned off.
Danny, always appreciate your time, mate. Thank you for jumping on our podcast. Just before you go, let's have a bit of a flavour of what away fans can expect. We might be bringing a few more than perhaps we were. I mean, it's not too far to travel either. Sunday afternoon, hopefully the weather's going to be nice. But, of course, lots of improvements to the Peninsula Stadium in the last few years. What can we expect if we are coming to the game on Sunday?
I'll tell you one of the main things that I noticed is that I normally bring my own like a snack bar to the match, but I forgot it the other game against Gillingham. So I had to buy some and I bought a pie. So I can heartily recommend the chicken tikka or chicken balti pie. It was fabulous. So I do think they've actually changed the catering supplier this season. people have complained about the service because there's not enough people serving and it takes a while to get served. But the actual food, from what I've sampled, although it's relatively expensive, it's pretty good. And there won't be that much. I can't imagine any kind of crowd trouble. Parking will always be an issue. Please, if you are driving to the game as an away fan, I would recommend you get there at like what time's kickoff, Dave? I don't know.
Two,
more than an hour earlier, because the line of cars going all the way down Moor Lane, to avoid the double yellers, please get there very early. So if you're coming on the coach, do what you want. But driving there, parking, there is no on-site parking in the ground. There's nothing on the concourse whatsoever.
But it's a nice modern stadium with all the improvements, a small stadium, so you're going to get a nice view, nice and close to the pitch whenever you're enjoying the action. So we're looking forward to it on Sunday, Danny. Last time I was at Moor Lane was before any of the improvements had been done. I sat in the old main stand. It was like a metal bench, wasn't it, in the main stand from, well, Lord knows when that was built. But looking forward to seeing how the ground has evolved and looking forward to the contest team.
Good to see you, Dave. But it's always good to guest on the pod, because I think you're one of the first podcasts that I actually guested on earlier this season. So it's great that you wanted me back. Must have done something right.
what final question, Danny? What constitutes a good last 10 games from your point of view?
Okay. Objective number one is be mathematically safe. Objective number two is to try and blood and get some minutes into the players, the younger players in the squad, who we may be looking to use next season. Because once we're safe, there's nothing else to play for. But playing to get a place or two higher, not interested in. Let's start to look at what Carl Robinson really wants to do. If he wants to drop Matt Smith for a few games, that's fine. I'm okay with that. Let's see what this club has got in reserve.
And give us a sales pitch for one up front. Where can we find it, and what do we need to know?
Okay. I've got a link. I'm actually on Twitter as well. I'm one of the blue tick verified. So I think I'm on one up front at SCFC on there. You can mainly find the podcast on Spotify. I think it is technically on Google Podcast, but I think Google Podcast, the whole platform, is being shut down very, very shortly for whatever reason. I've never managed to figure out how to load myself onto others. So Spotify is the place to find it. It's an audio only podcast, so there's no video element to it. And if you are interested in you know, tactics, anything like that, it's not always just specifically about my team. It can be about the wider football world as a whole. So, love to have you as a listener if you fancy it.
Get that in your ears. If you search One Up Front Salford on online, it all comes up. So go and have a look at that. Danny goes into enormous forensic detail about tactics and why things have happened or not happened. Great listen. Go and check that out if you can. Danny, thanks so much, mate. Good luck for the rest of the season, whatever it might have in store. Looking forward to Sunday, and hopefully we'll speak to you next time.
Cheers. Thanks, Dave.
Every kick, every game, every goal. Full match commentary of Morecambe FC on Beyond Radio. This is Shrimps Live from Beyond Radio.